Well, hello, America. It's Friday, and a good Friday it's going to be. I don't know about you, but if you watched the debate last night, which, of course, both of us did. You did, right, Stu? You watched the debate last night?
Yeah, I did.
So we were all over it. You're not getting a look when you go to CNN or the New York Times. You're not really getting all of the facts on what happened. Joe Biden, they said they thought he helped himself last night. I'd like to disagree with that, and I'll give you the evidence in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, Stu, you know, I'm going to say this, and this is going to be redundant for you, because I'm going to play some clips from the on your... And you,
I've heard all these clips already.
Yeah, you just saw it last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I guess...
You weren't watching football last night, were you?
Was there a game?
I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I don't like sports.
Yeah, and I wasn't at a parent-teacher conference last night either, begging to go.
This is the first time.
First time ever. Mm-hmm. Can I go talk to your teachers instead? So we were going to play a couple of clips for you. Now, this is one of many, but I want to start with this one. This is Joe Biden talking about how the government really can partner with parents to help them raise their kids. Listen. This is Biden confused about TV.
We bring social workers into homes of parents to help them deal with how to raise their children. It's not that they don't want to help. They don't know quite what to do. Play the radio. Make sure the television, make sure you have the record player on at night. The phone. Make sure the kids hear words.
What? Now, hang on just a second. I just want to, just to make Joe Biden feel comfortable, I have an old record player here. And, it's getting up to speed. Mm-hmm. Okay, so anyway.
Good God, are we in The Shining right now?
Now it's up to speed. Yeah, so...
Terrifying.
Isn't that the way your record player sounds?
Yeah.
I mean... Joe Biden. Oh, geez, hang on. See, kids, you all know that. There, okay. So, you know, you got to have the record player going.
This is the part where Jack Nicholson's at a really nice party, right?
It is kind of freaky, isn't
it? Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
And this I can turn it down. You know, it has volume control.
Yeah.
There.
Oh, there's like a little...
You just close the front of it, and that's the volume. Want it louder? I'll open it up
or
close it.
That's amazing.
That's your volume control. It's fantastic. So, Joe Biden, when was the last time you heard anyone say, you know, kids just don't hear enough words, so you got to make sure the parents have the record player on?
It's been a while since I've heard that sentence attempted.
I don't think... I've ever heard that sentence.
No.
Even growing up at a time where there were record players, I don't remember anybody's advice, keep the record player on.
Yeah, I don't remember that either. It's especially weird how he came to it, because he came to it not from, I would have assumed he said record player. I mean, you know, TV.
No.
He actually went TV and then corrected it to record player.
And then he went the phone, and then he realized, no, the phone wouldn't work. I mean, listen to this again. This is really not good.
We bring social workers into homes of parents to help them deal with how to raise their children. It's not that they don't want to help. They don't know quite what to do. Play the radio. Make sure the television, make sure you have the record player on at night.
Oh, my.
The phone. Make sure the kids hear words.
Oof. Wow.
First of all, can we also step back and realize he's like talking about social workers coming into your home to help you raise your kids? which is like the policy there seems questionable.
Well, especially if they're saying, turn on the radio.
Yeah, turn on. Where's the record player?
You kids nowadays, you don't understand. Turn on the radio. I mean, radio is even not the future. I hate to say it as a national broadcaster, but it shows how out of touch he is. Radio, no television, record players, put on the record player. I'll tell you what, Edison's got one of these things you crank all around, you put a little wax cylinder in there, and maybe kids have wax in their ears. Where are my shoes? I mean, he is out.
I think what he's actually trying to refer to there is there's some research that shows that, you know, kids perform better later in life if their parents read to them, if they're hearing conversations, if they're hearing words, that, you know, their vocabularies are better later in life. But he did not nail that.
No. Okay. How about this one? When Biden said, let's do I'm the vice president. Do we have that one?
Let's put pressure on them to pass the Violence Against Women Act now. But then
you didn't answer the question.
Well,
the question
is,
did you make a mistake with those deportations?
The president did the best thing that was able to be done at the
time. How about
you? I'm the vice president of the United States.
Secretary Castro.
Wait. I mean, I don't know. On that one,
okay.
In that he's talking about a scenario.
Okay.
And at that time, he was the vice president.
All right.
I can't kill him on that one.
Well, he did call Bernie Sanders the president last night.
He keeps doing that.
Yeah.
That's a weird one.
Yeah, so
he called Cory Booker the president last time, right?
Right. Now, here's Castro confronting him on this. Low blow or the right thing to do? Listen to this.
They wouldn't have to buy in. That's a big difference because Barack Obama's vision was not to leave 10 million people uncovered. He wanted every single person in this country covered. My plan would do that. Your plan would not.
They do not have to buy in. They do not have to buy in.
You just said that. You just said that 2 minutes ago. You just said 2 minutes ago that they would have to buy in. You said they would have to buy in.
To buy in. If she qualifies for Medicaid,
are you forgetting what you said 2 minutes ago?
Be in for it.
You said just 2 minutes ago? I mean, I can't believe that you said 2 minutes ago that they had to buy in, and now you're saying they don't have to buy. You're forgetting that.
I said anyone your grandmother who has no money.
We need a healthcare system.
You're automatically enrolled.
Automatically enrolls people regardless of whether they choose to opt in or not. I'm fulfilling the legacy of Barack Obama, and you're not.
I'll be surprised to him.
That's actually a solid line by Biden at the end. The one thing I did take out of this debate is that Julian Castro is a jerk.
He didn't help himself with that at all.
Awful guy.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a guy who is he's a zilch in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He's a zilch.
Mm-hmm.
And he is plucked by Obama Biden into a prime role in the administration for no reason other than to improve his prospects at future election. And how does he pay these guys back? He goes on stage. It's the second time he's done it. He tries to go after Biden because he's just trying to become the vice president under Warren. Like he believes Warren Castro is a thing.
He's doing what Biden used to do.
Yeah.
When he wanted to be vice president, he was the president's attack dog.
And that is what he's doing for Warren right now. So Warren doesn't have to do it. But
Correct. But is it legitimate to point out, wait a minute, are you forgetting?
Because I didn't remember him saying that. I think Biden was right on the point, wasn't he? I mean, we'll have to go back and listen to the audio.
I'd have to have actually not been an apparent teacher.
Right. And and I remember this play. I remember,
this
because it was a play? It was a 3 yard
Did you say,
run.
I remember it. All right. We're going to go to Houston here in just a second. Stand by. First, all right. We have Kevin Ryan on now with us. Kevin was down in Houston. Are you still in Houston, or are you back yet?
I'm still in Houston.
Okay. Kevin, how was it in the debate hall itself? What did you see? What stuck out to you?
So I was actually in the media. So all the media, for the most part, were in a gymnasium that was like right around the corner. And it actually worked out in a pretty cool way because I was able to gauge the way the media reacted to what was going on in the auditorium. And there were a lot of disparities. There were a few moments like when Yang saying about when he said, I'm Asian, so I know a lot of doctors. The audience didn't really react at all. The media surprisingly was like cracking up. They thought it was really funny.
Really? Because I've seen a lot of criticism on that one, saying that he was heightening stereotypes. And it's like, if you're gonna have a stereotype, being a doctor is not the worst one. I mean,
you know what? You know what? That just coming from a guy who's got a bunch of good-looking kids and very successful and uber smart
and healing people
and healing.
Yeah. We got those Asians this time.
I think at the end of the day, Biden was the winner of that debate.
And even that was with all of the, I mean, doesn't he look? Like maybe he doesn't have a grip on at least his
anything.
Yeah,
for sure. And there were a few moments during his gaffes when there was like chatter through the room, like his record player statement.
Yeah,
all you could hear after that was like everybody in the room was like, why is he talking about record players?
it's interesting with Biden in that he has a stamina issue, I would say, where he was good for the first half hour or so.
And
that's the part that most people watch.
You know, I'm not sure that that's a good thing, though, for the president.
No, it's a terrible
thing. I'm good for 30 minutes a day.
Yeah. Maybe they'll do less damage if he's only there for 30 minutes a day. It could be an upside of Biden from our perspective. But I think like he winds up, the longer these things go, he can't avoid the go to Joe30330.com.
Oh, sure.
And he just can't. He eventually will get himself caught in sort of that, you know, word barrage that he can't sort out. But at the beginning, he was relatively focused and did okay. And I don't think, did you? I didn't get the idea that there was a huge loser or winner. Nothing changed in the race from this debate. Was that your perspective, Kevin?
I think Biden got lucky that Castro obviously drank too much Red Bull before the debate and was just so salty.
Mm.
Because nobody liked his attack on Biden. It just seemed kind of unnecessarily nasty.
Especially coming from him.
Was he right about the... you just said that you'd have to sign up.
He wasn't right. No,
he was not right.
Actually, wrong. No.
Oh, jeez.
I know. If you're going to attack someone like that, at least have the facts.
Yeah. I mean, that's a bad attack to launch if you're not right. Let me ask you this: what was anyone's reaction to Biden saying, "Hey, we didn't put kids in cages"?
I didn't get a reaction out of that at all. It was fascinating to see this, and one way I saw it was with Klobuchar. Every time Klobuchar spoke, the whole media room was like, oh, thank God, we have a break now. So they would just like chat with their neighbors. People would go get a drink or food.
Wow.
They did not care about anything she said at all.
That's interesting, too, because she had a pretty good debate. It was definitely her best one so far.
Definitely. She had some canned line, like the Houston, we have a problem thing. Just like people, the whole room was like, oh, come on.
Yeah, that's a groaner. That is a groaner. I mean, come on. I know you're in Houston. You know the name of the city.
I'll be back.
Yeah.
Okay. That's weird.
I mean, you could tell. And this was the thing with Castro. Castro went into that debate, whether he had a senior moment or not, he was going to say, have you forgotten what you said 2 minutes ago? He knew he was going to say it. He had it planned. He was waiting to bring it out. He thought he had a good opportunity. He blew that opportunity, and he did it in a way that now everybody hates him, which they should, because he just seems like a jerk. I mean, he just seems like a jerk.
How about the reaction with Elizabeth Warren from the press?
I mean, they seem to really like her, which I still don't completely understand myself.
By the way, we're talking to Kevin Ryan. He's a writer for glenbeck.com and also theblaze.com.
Go ahead.
So you were talking about Elizabeth Warren.
So after the debates, all the candidates went over to the media center.
Mm-hmm.
All the candidates, except for Biden, by the way, for whatever reason. But it was a good gauge of who the media are really, really kind of obsessed with or a big fan of, because they would follow around. They would basically mob the candidates who they really like. And they were definitely following Warren around, and they were following Harris around, which surprised me. Because every time she spoke, the whole room just completely cringed.
Yeah, she did not have a good debate. She's struggling. I mean, she's struggling to recapture her magic from debate one. And she seems to go into these things with these ideas, you know, a lot of canned lines. I mean, she's not helping herself right now. I did see they did mob her, though. Kevin had sent some pictures, and there were reporters all over her. You know, Biden's interesting, though. I mean, there's a good strategic argument to say Biden doesn't have to do anything to win this nomination. He just has to not screw it up. So he comes out and he has a good first half hour and kind of sits back and you know, hopefully people tuned out by the time he started talking about record players. And then why go to the spin room where you might have another bad moment, right? What's the point? He's already winning by, you know, 10 points or 8 points or 15 points, depending on the poll.
What was the reaction? Let me play Beto. Hell yes.
he's agonizing.
I want to hear the press room reaction to this.
The high impact, high velocity round, when it hits your body, shreds everything inside of your body because it was designed to do that, so that you would bleed to death on a battlefield and not be able to get up and kill one of our soldiers. When we see that being used against children. And in Odessa, I met the mother of a 15-year-old girl who was shot by an AR-15. Mm-hmm. And that mother watched her bleed to death over the course of an hour because so many other people were shot by that AR-15 in Odessa and Midland. There weren't enough ambulances to get to them in time. Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
You know, what an interesting... trick he did, shell game of look at these bullets, and they bled to death because there weren't enough ambulances. It wasn't the bullet, it wasn't the AR-15. The press loved that, I'm guessing.
There was really no reaction, and I think the reason why is because they could see what he was getting at.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really there was no surprise there.
Yeah, we've been previewing this for a few days.
Was a surprise, however, that no one took the middle ground on guns last night. Not a single Democrat.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Homes and parents to help them deal with how to raise their children. It's not that they don't want to help. They don't know quite what to do. Play the radio. Make sure the television. Make sure you have the record player on at night. The phone. Make sure the kids hear words.
We're just making sure the kids are hearing words. I put the record player on. And what kids aren't screaming for the Mills Brothers?
Oh, kids love it. I mean. They really love the Mills Brothers these days.
They do.
What year was this thing made? This is a real record
about
player
1920,
here.
1920, yeah. This is in our studio. This is a Columbia Gramophonola. Gramophonola, I guess.
It's probably
it's about 1920.
And, it is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Oops, it's starting to slow down. I think I better take it off here. It gets a little ugly. All right, let me go to Brad Meltzer, who I'm sure is listening to his gramophone at home as well. Hi, Brad. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How you doing?
I'm very good. Brad Meltzer, who is the author of multiple books from fiction to history, adult to children. He's a machine. And he has a new book out called I Am Walt Disney that we tried to talk about a little bit earlier this week. But because of the news of the day, we didn't get a chance to really talk about it. And it is my favorite subject, I Am Walt Disney. Welcome, Brad. How are you?
So good to hear your voice. And I have to tell you, and I've been waiting for this talk because we know each other for over a decade now. That this was one of your heroes, too. So this is going to be a fun one.
Yeah, this is probably my hero. This is probably the guy that is my hero.
The same here. I've been waiting. You know, we started this series. You know, listen, we share that same love of history, and we started this series. Also, we know that our kids today need better heroes to look up to. It's enough to be – our kids are all looking at people who are famous for being famous. And I started this book series to give my kids heroes of character, heroes of kindness and of compassion and of hard work. And I've been waiting. I'm Amelia Earhart and Abraham Lincoln and Rosa Parks, but I've been waiting since the very first books to do I Am Walt Disney.
Now, I have to ask you, I am a fan of Walt Disney and I know it inside out. And you explain in the books how Mickey Mouse was born. You don't really go into the Oswald the Rabbit being taken by Universal and held until recently. However, that is why Disney is so litigious, because of the birth of Mickey Mouse or the death of Oswald. They don't screw around at all. How did you get the rights to have all of the Disney characters in this book?
I had to give away one kid, but I have three. So I felt but in all seriousness, it was the question, right? I was like, I can't tell the Walt Disney story. It's called I Am Walt Disney. You can't do it without having Mickey and Donald and Goofy. It just doesn't make sense. It would be absurd. The beautiful part was, and again, with a company that is, you know, knows how to kind of bring down that legal hammer, they loved our mission. Disney loved the mission of the Ordinary People Change the World series. They gave us the Muppets for I Am Jim Henson, and they gave us Mickey. They gave us Donald, Goofy. They gave us, you can see in there, Pinocchio, Winnie the Pooh. And they even opened the archives for us and gave us manuscripts that aren't even published that Walt Disney had written so we could work on the book. And they just said, we love that you're putting better heroes out for our kids. That's their mission, too. And they obviously proofed the book and helped us with the book.
They drew the art, did they not?
We did have Oswald in there in the beginning. We did have Oswald in there, but it got too confusing because it's a book for kids,
right?
It's a book for kids that are 12 and under. But I wanted everything in there. And the one, you know, one of the great things that that Disney did is help us make sure all those kind of details and versions of Mickey were right, including, and listen, the creation of Mickey is you know, Walt Disney is the great American success story. He gives us the happily ever after. He gives us the Magic Kingdom. But I think, and I'm guessing what you love about him, what I love about him, is that it wasn't easy. When Walt Disney started, you know, even as a little boy, his father used to look down on him because he was like, you know, how are you going to do art? That's never going to make any money. It was his aunt who used to buy him paper to draw on and said, you know, Walt, keep drawing.
Yeah, his dad and was
even when he turned.
His dad was a real sad sack. His dad was not helpful at all. And yet he persevered and he went for it anyway. Nothing could crush his dream.
Right. I mean, and that's the point of the book. I mean, when Walt Disney's 21 years old, he starts his first film company. It's a total disaster.
Disaster.
Right. He basically, they tell him he's going to have to declare bankruptcy. He's sleeping in his office. He's taking a bath once a week in the local train station. And I want my kids to know that if you chase a big dream, you might fail. But when you get back up again, that's how you fly.
Yeah. So I noticed you didn't include the part where he and Roy killed their parents.
Yeah, or all the – which you think he would. I mean, right? His father is literally – it's almost out of a Disney movie, right? Because that's where you feel like – that's where he gets all the killing of the parents from, right? Because every movie after that, that's all they do.
Yeah, and what's really – what's freaky is most people don't know this, that through an accident, Roy and Walt bought their parents a home in California. They were just starting to make it, and they wanted to get the parents out to California so they could thank them for their life, and it was so sweet. And because the transaction was happening so fast, they moved in. They get a call, and I think it was his mom that had died first. I think his dad had called and said, you know, your mom has passed out. Well, there was a gas leak, and they both passed away, and neither Roy nor Walt ever spoke about it again. I mean, I just can't imagine.
What I'm saying, and think about it, every Disney movie, what's the thing? It's always the dead parent, right? Whether it's Bambi, whether it's, you know, pick the Disney movie, Frozen, from Bambi to Frozen, there's always the dead parent, and you can't help but, like, psychoanalyze. And,
yeah.
And even, you know, and it comes, you know, I think one of the great, you know, moments in terms of, and again, going back to that never giving up on your dream is even the creation of Mickey Mouse. I mean, I actually didn't know this part of the story. Is Walt Disney comes up with the idea. He says, I got the idea for a cartoon mouse. We're going to call him Mortimer.
Mm-hmm.
Mortimer Mouse. And his wife is like, Mortimer, that's a horrible name. That's literally the direct quote we took. It's a horrible name. She says, why don't you call him, I don't know, Mickey. And that's how the world gets Mickey Mouse. The first Mickey cartoon doesn't even sell. My son, who loves to draw, is our creative, kind of plays with Lego. He always draws things, and he'll say, oh, that's not good enough. And I put in this book, our artist, you know, it's an illustrated kid's book. You see the real first ever draft of Mickey Mouse. You know, we put it in there. And my son's like, oh, it's not perfect. I'm like, thank you. I know. And I love that he gets, you know, our kids get to see that sometimes that first draft is, you know, is a first draft, and you got to make it better and better. And my God, does Walt Disney represent that? And we need that right now. Our kids are, they're so used to having, you know, we put them in bubble wrap and we want nothing bad to happen to them. But we got to teach our kids. You learn more by falling off the bike than being on the bike.
So there's a couple of things that I've done this mental exercise in the 20th century. Is there somebody who made a bigger impact for good in culture than Walt Disney? Try to imagine an America, let alone America, the world, without Walt Disney. We would be a totally different people. All of our fairy tales would be still, you know, the wolf wins in the end. Hansel and Gretel, you know, are eaten by the witch. The fairy tales, some people will argue back and forth, but he gave us this magical space, and he taught us that it's okay to dream. And the things that he brought from, I believe we would not have gone to the moon without Walt Disney, or at least we wouldn't have been able to get around it as quickly as we did as a people. Is there somebody, Brad, in the 20th century that you think is more important to the American story in the 20th century than him?
No, listen, he's writing the American story.
Right.
What I love, and I'll take it. Let's go even one step deeper on it. Is the reason that he writes that is because it's his story. The most authentic story we can ever tell, as you know, is our own story,
mm-hmm.
and we all see. You know, Walt Disney grew up in Missouri in this little town that was like that town that neighbors help neighbors and people are kind to each other. There's a train running down through the middle of town by Main Street. And when Walt Disney is a father, he used to take his daughters to merry-go-rounds. And they used to love the carousel in this park they used to go to in California. But he would look around and say, you know, there's nothing fun for the whole family to do together here. And this is the part you're going to appreciate, Glenn. I was like, is he starts studying other places where families go together. So he looks at amusement parks, of course, but he studies Gettysburg. He studies all these historical sites because back then people used to take their family
mm-hmm.
to go there. And he says, we're going to build a new park. And this park is going to have parts of the past, yesteryear. We're going to have the future and tomorrow. We're going to have a fantasy kind of land. And they said, well, what about today? Anything from today? He said, no, nothing from today. And when he built Disneyland, which of course is what it becomes, we all see Main Street USA and we see the origins of America in the simpler time. What we're really seeing is Walt Disney's simpler time. We're seeing his happy place. It's his hometown. That's what he's building, complete with a railroad that runs down the center.
Yeah.
And the whole book, what I Am Walt Disney as a kid's book stands for, is to teach kids, you have to find your happy place. We all have it. We should never give up on it. But it's there, and you got to find. When you find that thing you love, you just chase it, because that's the American dream. Finding that happy place for yourself.
That's what we called the pursuit of happiness. Brad, thank you so much. My favorite of all of the books that you have written for the children, You got it right. You know I am. I mean, I've been in the Disney vaults myself. I've read his day planner. Even they pulled that out of his vault because I was looking for something specific, and they pulled out his day planner for me. And I went through his calendar for the whole year. And I mean, you got it right. You got it right, and I thank you for that.
No, and listen, I just love the fact that you are as committed to this wonderful dream as I am. And I got to say, Glenn, you know, I know you support me with the thrillers and the things, but doing these kids books, I love that you help us support all this.
Yeah. Brad, thank you so much. God bless. So Stu and I were just talking about the debate last night, and I would like an apology from everyone in the media and the left.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you'll get it, by the way.
Yeah. And I think they owe America an apology. First of all, on the small one, they said we were conspiracy theorists for saying they were going for a single payer health care system. We had them on tape saying this is the first step. Obama's going to do this. Then we'll come in and we will say we need a single payer. It's not a conspiracy. As let me quote, it's not a Trojan horse. It's just right there.
I'm telling you.
OK, so we were called all kinds of names for saying that. Worse, we were called all kinds of names for saying that. They're going to come and take our guns. How many mm-hmm. times have you heard people say, oh, we're not going to come and take your guns. Nobody's going to confiscate guns. Beto last night, and no one on the stage last night, no one on the stage was like, well, now, wait a minute. I mean, you know, we do have a Second Amendment or even the Hunter thing. Well, I grew up with Hunter. None of that. None of that. Is anybody going to recognize this? And the only reason why is we don't need an apology. We need to recognize that the people who are promising you things now are established liars. Established liars. And you know what? Donald Trump can lie and say, you know, look, I'm a 100 billionaire. Whatever. I don't care. That's different than, look, trust me, I'm not going to take away your guns. I'm not trying to take away your Second Amendment right. I'm not trying to, like cattle, push you in to some sort of socialist healthcare system. That's totally different than I didn't have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. This is a lie that truly matters. You're going to save money. You're going to save $2,500. The average family is going to save $2,500, and this is going to make medical costs go down. Really? Did it? Why would we listen to these people?
And it's so overt. I mean, we're talking about a very short period of time. They went from saying anyone who said a single-payer system was coming was a conspiracy theorist and most likely a racist. You just didn't like Barack Obama because of the color of his skin, and that's why you were saying these things. All the way to this, where every candidate is up there talking about it.
My whole life, I tried to figure out how people like Mao, Stalin, Hitler, Mussolini came to power. How did the people not see it? The answer is they did. They just didn't want to do anything about it. They just didn't care.
I don't know. Is that it? Because I feel like it's that. At some point, emotion just takes over, and they don't even think about where they were before. And now the big people at the top all know, and they're moving. That's what progressivism is. But the people underneath, I mean, they were all saying these same things as if they believed these arguments. And I don't think, I don't remember the conversion. And now the same thing with guns. Oh, we're not going to take your guns. We're not going to take your guns. Hell yes, we're going to take your guns.
That's a quote. Both of those are quotes. I mean, it's nuts. Wake up, America. Wake up. It's coming hard and fast.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.